Hello, and welcome to Paganology, a podcast where we will be talking about paganism, folklore, witchcraft, and dark history. I am your host, Ashley, and together we will be diving into the magical, secret, and ancient pagan realm. Hello, welcome, or welcome back to Paganology Podcast. I am notoriously bad for new content. I am so sorry. I've had many, many life changes and updates. I don't even know where to begin, to be honest. Okay, so where do I start? I was off on stress leave from work. That was one of the major things. It got to a breaking point and I was off work for a little bit. And let me tell you, it was weird. The first few days, I literally just sat on my couch and I didn't know what to do with myself. I still have moments like that. Like, I don't even know how to be human anymore. It is a very weird feeling. That is definitely for sure. I had a lot of time to think about things and I applied to numerous jobs in that meantime as well. Because I seriously burned out. I was put off work because of burnout and for a lot of other reasons as well, but burnout was for sure the main reason for it. And it was really a situation where I needed a change of scenery. So over the course of my medical leave from work, I thought a lot about my future and over the past few months as well of basically what I want to do with my life. And basically, I had like a midlife crisis. That is basically what I went through or what I'm currently still going through. However, I did get a new job. I was off work for 3 months at this point, and this job kind of just appeared. I did apply for it and I did get it. And honestly, it's so far hands down my favorite job that I've ever had. It is still within the same company, but it's in a different department, and I truly love my coworkers. And what's a lot of fun with this situation as well is that I have worked with pretty much half the team in previous jobs before, so it was really good to have familiar faces when I got there, but everyone has been so nice and so kind, and honestly, the best people I have ever worked with. So yeah, it has been an interesting few months. One thing that I have been doing to fill up my time is trying to get back into my practice and read. There was a point over the past few months, or I guess I should say the past year, where it got to the point where I took down my altar completely because I just hit an ultimate low. During this burnout, I was seeing my doctor and my therapist often. And I was diagnosed with PTSD due to years of trauma that I never was really given the space to heal from. And even thinking back to when my father passed away, that same day I was at the funeral home making the arrangements. And I'm talking like 8 a.m., you know, like he passed overnight. And by 8 a.m., I was already planning everything. I have been through a lot over the years, and I was never really allowed to cry or to grieve or to process trauma when I was younger, which now that I'm in my 30s, all this unhealed stuff is just hitting. So I literally had to take a step back even from work to deal with some stuff and to process this, and I am a lot better, that is for sure. It's obviously a work in progress, but that is basically where I have been for the past year. I am so sorry about that. I never want to let you guys down or not put out content, but it hit and I had to take a moment. I had to take a step back and just focus on that, unfortunately. One thing though that has helped me getting connected with my practice again and ultimately my ancestors is cooking. I am for sure a kitchen witch. I am really trying to cook things from my roots, so Nordic, Celtic, and French foods mainly, as well as seasonally and locally. As many of you know, I do garden. I'm an avid gardener, so I do grow a lot of my own food, which is very important for me. I have also found that, well, for me anyway, when I focus on things from my roots, I feel better about it. I feel more nourished spiritually and physically. I truly feel this connection to my roots, or if I'm eating locally, I have a connection to this part of the neck of the woods that I live in, you know? And one way that seems to really make me feel this way is soup. Soup is literally one of my main food groups. It has always been a part of my medicine, my self-care, and even my love language. If I am making you a bowl of soup, it is because I truly care about you and I am putting every intention in that soup for healing and for nourishment. Like, it is honestly my love language to everyone that I care for. Even now, with my current team, once a month we work off-site and we have a ritual of getting soup from this amazing soup restaurant close by. My grandmothers, one was French, the other was Scottish, made so many soups, and I have so many fond memories of their soups. Growing up, every Wednesday, my grandmother on my mother's side would make the biggest pot of cabbage soup. She grew up very poor, and this was a soup that she had to make her immediate family and extended family when she was a young girl herself. So she would have to make this because she was the oldest of the family. And instead of going to school or anything like that, she had to stay home and basically cook soup for the family. And all of the extended family that would come to the farm to work on the farm would have soup as well. And that tradition kind of carried on over her entire life. And when I was a young child, even then, every Wednesday at some point in the day, all of my aunts, uncles, cousins, and even some of my great aunts and my great uncles would show up for a bowl of soup at her house. And there was really not much to it. It was like a head of cabbage, some carrots, onions, rice, and a broth. Like nothing to it, but it was hearty and it fed the whole family. And we have so many memories together of gathering on Wednesdays to have soup with my grandmother. I have tried many, many, many times to make the soup exactly like hers, and I just cannot do it. I even follow the recipe that she gave me and the exact timings and everything, and it never turns out the way that she made it. She would put the rice in directly with the broth, and there would always still be broth left over, but when I do it, the rice absorbs all of the broth, and yeah, I have to keep adding to it. It just goes to show you that intention is everything when it comes to making soup. I miss her and her soup very much. When she passed away, my grandfather kept up the tradition for some time, but he is now 96 and has stopped that for a few years now. But when she passed, he would make a big pot of soup every Wednesday and the family would show up and have soup with him. So it was definitely a cherished and fond memory that I'll always, always have. When she passed as well, my grandfather gave me some of her wooden spoons. They were very old and worn. And what I actually did with one of them that was like her spoon, I actually hung it up in my kitchen on the wall. So I always have this ode to her when I attempt to make her soups. I did use it for a little while, but then it started to crack and I really did not want to damage it even more, so I decided to hang it up instead. And same with my grandmother on my dad's side as well. She made this amazing dumpling soup, and I cannot make it either to save my life. Again, it was the intention that she was putting in her soups to feed her family. It was spectacular. And yeah, everything about soup making is definitely in the intention. They were both magical beings, and I miss them both very, very much. But I digress. So, what was the point of me talking about my grandmother's soups? Well, today's episode is going to dive into a witch's most used and beloved tool, the cauldron. So, yes, there was a reason for my soup stories. The cauldron is one of the most iconic symbols in the witch world. So, today we're going to talk about some folk tales to historical facts. And really dive into why the cauldron has been around for centuries and that every witch has one in their home. Cauldrons began popping up in the early 12th century and remained in use throughout all of Northern Europe until the 18th century. The cauldrons were made from either ceramics or metal that either stands on three legs or hung directly over a fire. They came in all shapes and sizes, and some of them even had adjustable hooks or attached directly to a chimney crane, which is that thing that hangs over a fire that you could move from over the fire and then out of the hearth, essentially. And the cauldron really was the primary domestic cooking tool in medieval England. Over time as well, cast iron became the standard eventually due to its durability, so ceramics were really not part of the cauldron world anymore. They became so popular that they were present in almost every medieval household or kitchen, regardless whether you were rich or poor. In the homes of the nobility and even in the castles, cauldrons were found in the kitchens alongside ovens and hearths. But for those who were less fortunate, often living in single-room homes, there was still a massive hearth at the center of the home, and cauldrons were located there as well. The hearth gave light, heat, and with the help of the cauldron, it provided food to many, many families. Cauldrons were often passed down through generations of families, similar to how cast iron pans are passed down today. Now, it wouldn't be an episode if I didn't talk about some linguistics, specifically the origins of the word cauldron. The term cauldron is derived from caldrias, meaning hot. This word then provided the root meaning for calderium, which means a cooking pot, as well as the Anglo-Norman French word caudron, which came the Middle English word cauldron in the 14th century. As a linguist, word origins really interest me, and whenever I can find something about word origins, I will always mention them in episodes. So if there's something that interests you, I will always, always try and do this for you. But how do we go from a cooking tool to a witch symbol? I mean, everyone is using them, so how did this happen? This would mean that everyone would be a witch, right? One of the most famous of all ancient cauldrons is the Gundestrup cauldron, and I really hope I said that right, but it dates back to roughly 200 BCE. Yep, that's right, 200 BCE, and it was discovered in Himmerland, Denmark, near Gundestrup. And the reason why it is so important and so famous is the imagery on the cauldron. The imagery on the cauldron is a combination of Thracian and Gaulish symbols, including elephants, dolphins, bulls, dogs, boars, and a male and female figure. But that's not all. There is one more thing on this cauldron that is very interesting. The Celtic horned god Cernunnos is thought to be a cross-legged figure on one of the cauldron's panels. Yep. We have some pagan symbolism on the cauldron. These intricate designs on the cauldron suggest that the cauldron's use was a spiritual tool and not just for food preparation. Isn't this super interesting? And I could put money on that when the Christian church, the Catholic church, found this and discovered this and looked into it more, they would have used this as a tool to convert people into Christianity. It is very common knowledge that once the church discovered certain pagan things, they would use it to their advantage. And I truly feel that finding this cauldron and looking into this cauldron, they would have used it as propaganda to say that, you know, all witches use cauldrons. Again, this is not fact. There's no research on this. This is something that I personally believe that could have potentially happened, just given the way that other things have gone in the past. I feel that this is kind of where the image of a cauldron and a witch were linked together. Because when we look back at all of the witch hunts in Europe and North America, they were targeting poor widowed women who lived alone in one-room homes, who probably had a cauldron over the fire cooking food, medicine, disinfecting cloth, or even washing their clothes. So all of these people who were accused of witchcraft had cauldrons, and their cauldrons naturally became a symbol of witchcraft. Today, you can get cauldrons in all shapes and sizes, but the modern witch doesn't really cook with them on a regular basis anymore. And that is simply because we don't really cook over fire. I mean, if you're camping, by all means, you can definitely still use a cauldron, but depending on what stove you have, you may not be able to use a typical cast iron cauldron on just a regular stove, which means sadly, the cauldron has essentially been phased out due to modern stoves. That being said, people still buy cauldrons and they are used for many different things. The modern witch or pagan would be using them to brew herbal remedies and simmer pots. They are a great fireproof tool, so they are great to burn loose leaf incense as well as charcoal discs, but just make sure they are on a trivet or a stove or they have legs because it does get very hot when you burn charcoal in them. They can be used today to make black salt as well as using them for burning rituals because they are fire safe. And the cauldron is also a symbol for feminine energy or all four elements on the altar. The cauldron was seen as the womb, so probably another link to witches and of course how evil us women are because we use a cauldron. I mean, we have to be evil, right? If we have a cauldron, right? It has to go with the imagery of a witch, right? But yeah, there are so many uses for them. And also, thank you to consumerism. We now have access to cauldrons in all shapes and sizes, as well as cauldron-shaped coffee mugs, which, yes, of course, they're going to be great for coffee and tea, but they can also be used to eat your soup with, or you can use them for mini rituals, setting intentions, and then drinking it. The evolution of the cauldron is quite interesting, and just like all pagan and witchcraft related things, there always is that gray area because sadly, a lot of traditions were not written down. What we do know is that the cauldron was the main cooking tool for centuries, and the evolution of food changed drastically with fire, tools to cook with, and access to food throughout the years. But one thing that was cooked a lot was soup. See, my story at the beginning did have a point after all. Soup is very old, and you're going to be shocked by how old it is. Based on archaeological evidence, the first soup was cooked in 20,000 BCE. I'm just going to let that sink in there for a minute. 20,000 BCE. And it is no surprise that the first bowl of soup is from China. Ancient pottery showed scorch marks, which many historians have determined that a kind of soup was made in these pots. With the progression of clay pots, bowls, and eventually the cauldron, soup became part of the everyday menu around 6000 BCE. And it really makes sense that it was part of everyday life because it was very, very cheap to make, and food was very scarce during these times. It was a very healthy and hearty meal, and people could make massive pots of soup to feed their very large families or even their communities, very similar to how my grandmother would feed her entire family when they had little to no money. People would put their ingredients in a pot or a cauldron, add some water, and cook it over fire. It was either cooked over a fire outside or over the fire inside a home's hearth. As time passed and people started exploring and colonizing the world, people were getting exposed to new spices and ingredients, which has led to amazing soups that we have today. For the purpose of this episode, though, I will also include stews along with soups because they are very similar and have a very similar history. The word soup started out in the Germanic family. The root word has grown into words like soup, sop, and supper, which meant to consume something liquid. It then moved over to Latin around the 6th century, where we got the term supa, which means a piece of bread eaten in broth. And we know that there is a link between Rome and France thanks to the Catholic Church. We now find the word soup pop up in France, where this means bread soaked in broth or the broth itself. I always find it very interesting how things move around Europe and how things get influenced, but With the proximity to France, England is now in about the 17th century, and we have moved away from the term pottage or broth, and England has adopted the term soup. And here we are in 2024, and we use soup for soup. And what I find kind of interesting, being part French, the word pottage now is a form of soup. So it's very interesting how England adopted the word soup, but then France and the French culture adopted the word pottage for a type of soup. So I found it very interesting. Now, the history of stews, you are going to find very interesting, or at least I did, and I'm sharing it with you because I found it very interesting. So unlike soup, stew is a little bit more challenging to locate the origins. The word stew comes from an old French word, estove, which meant a stove. Pretty self-explanatory. But it also meant a heated room or a cooking cauldron. What we do know is that stews were one of the first known things to be cooked in a cauldron. Again, they are very similar to soups, but not at the same time. Now, this next part is very interesting and kind of blew my mind. The word stew back in the 1400s used to refer to public steam rooms. Yep, it was not only a food dish, but also a public bathhouse, which gets even more interesting because the word stew eventually became slang for a brothel. Wild, right? And it took a few centuries for stew to move away from meaning a brothel to a dish that we cook on the weekend in a crock pot, you know? It was in the 18th century that stew became stew and no longer referred to brothels. So, you know, only like 400 years of it being referred to a brothel. And I almost wonder, because stew is often referred to as like the poor man's meal, I almost wonder if it is this link to the brothel that it is named that. This is literally a thought that just came up in my mind right now, so I probably have to look into it a little bit more. But yeah, I almost wonder if that is why it's referred to as the poor man's meal. Something that I will have to look into a little bit more. In terms of soup folklore, there is one story that comes to mind, and that is stone soup. This is a pretty common story, so I'm assuming many of you have already heard it. I have been told this story many times when I was a child by both my grandmothers, and there are many different versions of this depending on the origin of where you're hearing it from. But for those of you who have not heard this story, I will quickly summarize it for you and tell you the story. Once upon a time, some travelers come to a village carrying nothing more than a stone. Upon their arrival to town, they are hungry, but they have no food or money, so they go to the villagers for help. But the villagers are unwilling to share any of their food stores with the hungry travelers. The travelers go from door to door asking for help until they stumble upon an old woman living alone. She is very poor and barely has any food of her own. One of the travelers comes up with this idea and he tells her that he has a magic stone and that if he had a pot and some water, he would be able to make stone soup. Now, the old woman, who is also very hungry, is very intrigued by this magical stone soup. So she fills her cauldron with water and puts it over the fire, and he places the stone inside. The traveler then says that this soup would be better if he had some potatoes for it. So she finds some potatoes and cuts them up and gives them to him, which then he places in the pot of water and the stone. A neighbor comes by because they are smelling something cooking, and they explain that they are making stone soup to the neighbor. Traveler then tells the neighbor the soup would be better if they had some meat. So the neighbor goes home and fetches some meat to add to the stone soup. As the day goes on, more and more neighbors come by because everyone is talking about this magical stone soup. They all bring an ingredient to add to the soup like onions, cabbage, peas, celery, tomatoes, corn, milk, butter, salt, pepper, you know, you get the idea. Finally, the soup is done and the stone is removed because it is inedible. And they are left with a very nourishing and delicious pot of soup. And all of the villagers and the travelers are able to have a bowl of soup. Although the travelers have tricked the entire village into sharing their food with them, even though previously they said they weren't able to share anything, they have successfully transformed all of the ingredients into a tasty meal, which they share with everybody. Depending on which variation of the story that you may have heard in the past, one of the versions says that the villagers then sell the stone to the old woman, because she feels she can never make a better soup again unless she has the stone. So ultimately, they get a free meal off the villagers and they make money off this poor little old woman. But the moral of the story is about community and sharing. Today, stone soup is the name given to a wide variety of hearty meat and vegetable soups that stems from that folktale about community and sharing. Stone soup typically includes simple ingredients such as potatoes, peas, cabbage, and meat. It is often seen also as a poor man's meal, as it is very simple and everyday ingredients, but they create a wonderful soup when they are combined together. At the end of the day, soup is a wonderful, easy meal to make, and it can feed many, many people. And there are so many different kinds, you know, you can have a flavor or a type of region, and every single area has a form of soup. I am for sure going to start calling my kitchen sink soups, you know, the soups where I'm trying to use up ingredients in the fridge, stone soup going forward, because that's essentially what those soups are. It's combining ingredients that are currently in my fridge, trying to use them up before I lose them. So going forward, I am for sure going to be calling my kitchen sink soups stone soup. When I first started doing research on this episode, specifically on the history of soup, I was blown away that the first soups that they were able to find were from 20,000 BCE. That is crazy to me, honestly. I knew they were going to be old, but I didn't think they were going to be that old. So I found that very interesting. But that is it for today's episode. I really hope you liked it. I do have a few episodes written and recorded already, so I will be posting more regular content again. I know I have said that in the past, and I have hurt you all by not posting. I am so sorry, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, I really needed to take a step back, and unfortunately, you know, it meant taking a step back from the podcast as well. But I am very happy to be back and excited for the new episodes coming up. They are very interesting, or at least they are for me, and I hope that they're going to be interesting for you as well. But I will see you all next time. Thank you for listening and tuning in to this episode. I want to thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard and you want to support me, please like and follow this podcast on the platform you are listening from. Your support means so much to me. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, or if you just want to have a quick chat with me, you can follow me over on Instagram at Paganology Podcast. You can also use the hashtag Paganology Podcast to tag me in things. And you can also email me at paganologypodcast@gmail.com. I will see you in the next episode. Stay safe, be kind to each other. But for now, friends, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. This podcast is recorded on unceded Algonquin Anishinaabe territory. Paganology is written, recorded, and edited by me, Ashley H.